Morning. Morning. So this morning, I'm going to talk about resurrection. Well, why not? Last Sunday was Easter, and I wasn't talking then, so maybe somebody else talked about it then. Something I haven't talked about before. Resurrection. So I grew up in California on the West Coast. Yeah. I went to a very liberal Unitarian church as a boy. So liberal that I didn't know anything about this stuff. Really, I didn't know anything about it. But I did know about zombies. That's resurrection, right? If that ain't resurrection, what is? The year I was born, the Revenge of the Zombies came out. And when I was about 5, my parents took me to this drive-in theater to see Revenge of the Zombies. And I hid behind the front seat of the car. But for a long time, for many years, I was really into zombies. You know how kids get into things. It wasn't until I was in adolescence that somebody said, Easter is about, it's like zombies. It's about dead people coming back to life. And I said, what? Well, of course, it's about one dead person coming back to life. And so then I learned. Then my grandmother then told me about Easter. We've been doing Easter with Easter bunnies and Easter eggs, but we never knew that part in California Unitarian. We just didn't know that. So it was very interesting. I spent all these years with zombies, and now I was learning about the resurrection of Jesus, and my grandmother was telling me about it. And for those of you who aren't educated in Christianity, I'm going to tell you about it now, but not much. So first of all, Jesus is crucified. Then he's put in the tomb. Then they come to the tomb and find that he's gone. Then he is sighted. First, he's cited in the upper room by Thomas, who can't believe that that's really Jesus. And so what does he do? He pokes his finger into the crucifixion hole in his wrists and in his side, and he sees, oh, it's really Jesus. And then along the road to Emmaus, Jesus appears again. People have been talking about their failed hopes for the Messiah, and then there he is in flesh and blood. And then by the Sea of Galilee, and then his final appearance is reported 40 days after the resurrection, and then he ascends into heaven. And I also had Mormons who were friends when I was in adolescence, and they said, but then he came to the U.S. because Mormons believe that he came to the U.S. and he was seen there, appeared there, and in his body, and bestowed priesthood on 12 apostles. And then I guess he ascended again after that. I don't know. So that was a very interesting story for me, as someone who wasn't raised in it, to learn about it in my adolescence. I still think it's an interesting story. And of course, Christianity is based, most Christianity, I can't speak for all of it, based on this theological principle, this belief about something which happened historically. That this person descended from God, did this, ascended back to God, and if we have faith in him, in it, in his resurrection, then we can experience a salvation of our own, a resurrection of our own. That's how I understand it. So that's interesting. So how does that all relate to Zen practice, to Zen life? Well, I'm going to suggest some relationships. When I think about my own life, people who've died, and how after their death they've come alive or not come alive for me. I have a grandfather I was close to when I was a kid. He's kind of come alive. I've got his picture on my dresser in my house, and he's kind of come alive, and I remember him. But as those of you guys who've hung out with me a lot know, the person that I always talk about is the man that I spent 5 years with when I was 21 years old until 26. Not very long. I'm 67 now. Only 21 to 26. And that's Suzuki Roshi. And so I have to say that I don't know what it means that he's alive in my life. I don't know what it means. But I certainly, if anything's alive, but he, is it a he? I don't know. It seemed to be a male form back then, but certainly not always a male form. Someone asked me in practice period about this, I think it was 10 days ago, because we're studying Suzuki Roshi's text, Not Always So. And they said, when you're doing this, when you're encountering him, what do you think? And I said, gee, I don't think anything. I don't think anything. But what I experience is some joy welling up. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know if it has anything to do with him or you or me or anyone. But it's always welling up. It's always welling up. So is that resurrection? I don't know. I don't know. But it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And Zen teaching is that joy can be accessed at any time. All we have to hear is one note on the shakuhachi from Leo Hansen. And we don't even have to hear the note. We can just hear the spaces in between. And there it is. There's that joy. So maybe that's resurrection. Maybe it isn't. So in Zen Buddhism, there are a few kind of resurrection type stories, although there's no historical thing that happened. That there are lots of historical things and mythological things about Buddha, but nothing that we believe in that will give us salvation or eternal life, which this. But in a way, but there's some similarities too. So I want to read you a story from the record of Rinzai, the record of Linji. One day at the street market, Fuke, the Zen teacher Fuke, was begging all to give him a robe. I guess his robe had worn out. So maybe he didn't have good sewing skills or something. I don't know. He was begging everybody to give him a robe. Everybody offered him one, but he did not want any of them. Rinzai made the Eno. Most of you know who the Eno is. The Eno is the head of practice. Made the Eno buy him a coffin. And when Fuke returned, Rinzai said to him, "There, I had this robe made for you." Pretty good, huh? Pretty good. Well, Fuke shouldered the coffin and went back to the street market, calling loudly, "Rinzai had this robe made for me. I'm off to the east gate to enter transformation." And the character for transformation in Chinese also means die. the people of the market crowded around him, eager to look, to watch him entering the coffin, right? And dying. He said, "No, not today, tomorrow. I shall go to the South Gate tomorrow. Come to the South Gate tomorrow." And so for 3 days he went to different gates, and people thronged around and said, "No, not today, not today." Nobody believed it any longer. On the fourth day, and now without any spectators, Fouquet went along outside the city walls and laid himself into the coffin. He asked a traveler who chanced by to nail down the lid. The news spread at once, and the people of the market rushed there. On opening the coffin, they found that the body had vanished. Hey, just like Jesus, what a deal. The body had vanished, but from high up in the sky, they heard the ring of this handbell. So we have some of these stories in Zen too. So we could say that in Zen, this is a story about, we can say it's a metaphor for transformation, can't we? It's a metaphor for transformation that Fouquet is encouraging us to practice. And what can we also say? That he's using a lot of play and humor. A lot of play and humor. He's making fun of our getting attached to having a robe or not going into a coffin or this body or leaving my body or transcending. He's making it into some wonderful and joyful joke. But that joke is on all of us. And the joke is life itself. So Rinzai was especially known for his statement that the way to practice Zen was to embrace the person of no position. No position. So Fouquet's teaching is about not attaching to any particular position, right? So how does that relate to resurrection? Well, if resurrection is sprouting something out of something that's dead, bringing something to life, then they're not different. They're not different. If resurrection is about dying, the talkative little Tim, the talkative little Jeff, the talkative little Dan, the talkative little whomever, who's always trying to get along, worried about his health, trying to do the best job he can, and comparing and contrasting, that death, that stillness that comes from our zazen. From just simple zazen, just simply sitting down. Just simply sitting down and breathing. That's simple. That death there's a birth to something in that death. There's a coming to life. Coming to life. Suzuki Roshi calls it heart mind. Big mind. No mind. No longer carrying around that corpse of memory. No longer being saddled by that corpse, being weighted down by that corpse of memory. Memory is cool, but geez, can't you give it a break? This is about giving memory a break, you guys. That's where your joy comes. When you give memory a break. And then there's a transformation that takes place immediately. So in the Jesus story, we have the crucifixion, we have the resurrection, and then we have the ascension on the 40th day. A Buddhist generally wouldn't think that way too much. Not too much. For one thing, ascension is not that valued in Buddhism. Not that valued. Because ascension means what? Descension. So the more we ascend, the more we're going to descend. So it's, ascension is cool, providing you get it. Kind of you stay with it. So that's why heaven realm, the sixth realm, the highest realm, is not considered the best realm to practice in. So the idea that we would be joining Buddha in heaven, well, that's okay, but you should be careful up there. The story, the first time I heard the six realms, the six psychological realms in Buddhism talked about, heaven being the sixth one, was a teacher who had been a teacher of French literature and history. And he said, oh, it was a he, not a she. He said, oh, Marie Antoinette, she was an example of someone who was just fixated on a heaven realm. Well, since that, there have been a lot of revisionist history about her, and she doesn't get the bad rap she used to. But back then, her naivete, her attachment to beauty, her not getting it, that the people were starving, and her famous statement, let them eat bread, which the revisionists say she didn't make. But that's all an ascension. An ascension foible, an ascension limitation. So heaven realms are cool, but be careful, be careful. So my grandsons, I have two grandsons now. Those of you been keeping up with me. I don't have to do anything. They just come. It's nice to be a grandparent, you know. You just show up, and then you go home. So I have a grandson 4, and I have a grandson 11 months. 10 and a half months. And my grandson, who's 10 and a half months, the last 10 days, has been in a God realm. He's ascended. He's been in heaven because his parents bought him, or some relative bought him, a little thing that he can scoot around in. Mm-hmm. He can stay upright, and it has a little circular frame, and he can scoot all around the house. And he's only 11 months, so he doesn't walk yet. He doesn't even crawl. But he can follow his 4-year-old brother everywhere in this thing. And he doesn't fall down. He doesn't fall down. God realm, heaven realm. And his brother doesn't like it. His brother always wheeling him back into the other room. But he's not going to stay in that God realm too long, right? After a while, he'll be getting out of that. He'll be crawling. Then he'll be trying to stand up. I can remember when his brother was 2, and we saw his brother, went to visit his brother. His brother had bruises all over himself from all the times he'd fallen down. Well, that's the human realm. And that's the realm to practice in. That's what we practice in, the human realm. So, resurrection really needs to go along with fracturing. Fracturing and resurrection go together. They have to go together. Ascension doesn't need that, but resurrection does. So here's a couple poems that actually I put in your program, but I don't know if you've got programs this morning. Well, a couple you did. William Butler Yeats, to eat and to be eaten. The grain must be ground, the wine pressed, the bread must be broken. The true body is a body broken. Dylan Thomas, nothing can be soul or whole that has not been rent. So that's our practice, that's Zen practice. I'm sorry. If you want another kind of practice, go somewhere else. This is Zen practice. This is live practice for all of us. It doesn't matter if you how much you sit and how good your karma is and how many friends you have. It doesn't matter. This is it. This is it. That's really wonderful, isn't it? The human realm. Those of you who've studied the six realms know that the human realm is the only realm where there's a chance of opening to real freshness and resurrection, because it has an equal amount of pain and pleasure, an equal amount of suffering and joy. In the hell realms, there's too much suffering. We get frozen in the hell realms. In the hungry ghost realm, we get frozen in, I'm not good enough, if only she could give me some of hers. In the animal realm, we get frozen in our food and sex and power. But in the human realm, we're frail, we're fragile. We break, and we can have a breakthrough right at that breaking with our still Zazen mind, with our still focused Zazen mind, which isn't trying to focus too hard. If it tries to focus too hard, then it's not really in the human realm. It's in the God realm, or immediately falling into the hell realm. You know, that's the other thing. People in the God realm, the next realm is the hell realm, immediately. So that's our lives. That's our practice. And there's a Zen poem from Japan. Gazing out the window, snow piling on top of snow, mistake after mistake, continuing my practice forever. Last Temptation of Christ. A paragraph from The Last Temptation of Christ. You said, first came the wings and then the angel. We never noticed these words in Scripture, Holy Abbot. And the abbot answers, how would you have noticed them? Alas, your minds are still dim. You open the prophets and your eyes are able to see nothing but the letters. Nothing but the letters. But what can the letters say? They are the black bars of the prison where the spirit strangles itself with screaming. Between the letters and the lines, and all around the blank margins, the spirit circulates freely. And I circulate with it and bring you this great message. Friars, first came the wings, and then the angel. So, one of my favorite Bodhidharma quotes is when Bodhidharma was with the emperor, and the emperor said, then what is the first principle of your holy teaching? Being kind of frustrated by Bodhidharma, and Bodhidharma said, a vast spaciousness with nothing holy about it. That's where we find our resurrection. Resurrection is a big fancy word. We're just spaciousness. We're just resting in this. And sometimes falling down. But there's no reason we can't rest on the way down. Why not? Why not? Down is as good as up, isn't it? So, I guess that's about what I want to say about resurrection. Questions? Comments?
You talked about resurrection giving you a memory of grace, but also the joy you experience from the Is that not from memory?
That's a good question. I don't know. It must be from memory, but it, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, emotional memory. Emotional memory. Yeah. So memory encourages us. Maybe memory encourages us to come back to just this. Maybe all those teachings, maybe all that transmission that we remember, we memorize those, at least those of us who study this stuff, it encourages us to remember that we can be resurrected at any moment because that joy is always coming up. If I'd never met him, I wouldn't have that joy. So if it's not memory, then it's got to be some mystical thing. Let's not get into that.
Jim, I really like the blood root flower, the first thing in spring coming up out of the driveway.
And I saw Bill out my window this morning while I was getting ready to come downstairs, and he was in the backyard looking at a lot of the plants, looking I think at their growth, looking at their leaves, looking at whether they were sprouting, looking at whether they were going to, where they were resurrecting themselves. And sometimes things don't resurrect themselves, but they do. Everything is always changing, always growing and decaying and growing, and this wonderful transition from history to mystery. And just to be able to be okay with the mystery of it, be okay with the mystery of it, even if you're on the way down, because it's all the same. Other people? Sure. Pardon?
Talking, I was asking myself if a joker is a Zen priest.
A jogger is a Zen priest? Is a joker a Zen priest? Well, I don't know.
Maybe the reason I ask that is because everything's laughable. Is it nihilistic? And it is not nihilistic, but then what's the point? And that's kind of the riddle that jokers give their audience, too.
Well, there is a kind of a joker who's... I mean, when I think of jokers, I think of sardonic or sarcastic jokers. I think of the Joker with Batman.
Yeah, no, well, I don't think of politics. I think of the Joker tradition that goes...
Oh, well, the Joker, you know, the trickster in shamanism, the Joker in Shakespeare, very close to Zen teaching. Very, very close. When I don't read Shakespeare anymore, but I used to, actually. Those clowns, they're always turning everything upside down. And then they're showing that the upside is the downside is the upside, and we can just relax and go with it. They're talking to the kings, they're talking to... Sure, but let's not make a religion out of it. And the joke is when you're a really good joker, you can begin to laugh with joy even when the joke is on you. The joke is on me. Can I laugh with joy and love and spaciousness even though the joke is on me? It's always on me. I had a big joke happen to me a week ago, and I'm not going to get into it. A big joke. Yeah.
So, when we do a memorial service, mm-hmm. we do an initial one, and then 40 days later, we do the
49. Yeah, there's 40 and 49. It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, 40, 49.
I don't know. Somebody's going to calculate.
We could start a religious debate about that, whether it's really 49 or 40.
When I think of resurrection, I think of refreshment seeing things anew.
That's right. Refreshment, renewal, first time. Bye-bye. Saying goodbye to those guys, but bye-bye to the first. When we say completely bye-bye to something, then we're in a welcoming state of mind. Anytime you say bye-bye wholeheartedly, you're welcoming state of mind. That's your Buddha nature. That's your no Buddha nature. That's breaking and breakthrough. And that's joy, but let's not make a religion out of it. Do you understand what I mean when I say that? Other people? Yeah.
I've been trying to synthesize what you're saying about death is, if I'm wrong, I'm saying death is the letting go of memory. And I was remembering the teaching that the difference between nirvana and samsara is the same place. So I was trying to tie the two together because they seem related. Is that if it's my perception of my current situation, suffering, and samsara, so it would seem to be a, the two ideas that seem related, that getting great.
Yeah, well, but let's not get this. Memory is, so now I have to, memory is very important. We're all.
I've gotten to the age where I appreciate that. Yeah.
Pardon?
I've gotten to the age where I appreciate
that. Yes, me too. Memory is very important. I'm only talking about the emotional bindingness of memory. And how memory can actually, when I saw Bill looking out the window, I just wanted to watch you because you were just looking at each of those. You were walking around, and if I had remembered how somebody else did it, I wouldn't have been there. And at other times, I have, but in this case, I just saw him. But it doesn't mean that I didn't have my memory of how this is spring and how Bill really takes care of the. Bill has been a wonderful parent to all these plants and all these trees for years, and he's the kind of silent parent who doesn't make a big deal out of it. But that's memory. He needs memory to do that, but he takes care of the plant itself, not based on memory, but based on what he sees. So, and with our zazen, we just calm our minds down enough so we let go of the needing to be someone, needing to be something, worried that we aren't good enough, so that we can really be with that bud, and so that we can see the death of all those leaves in the compost and that little sprout that comes out of it. And die with it. And die with it when it's our time. And we don't get to decide. We don't get to decide. I don't know, did that deal with your question or not?
Yes, you confirmed what I was saying. You were talking
Leo.
Earlier about Fuke. He was the founder of the Fuke sect of Buddhism.
That's right.
Which was the beginnings of Buddhist priest playing shakuhachi.
Hey!
not himself play shakuhachi. He used to walk around sounding the ringing of bells. One of his disciples was playing the flute to try to imitate this sound. And when he was in the coffin, the villagers opened the coffin and they heard the sound of the bell ascending into the sky. There's three pieces of shakuhachi that are supposedly the most sacred. One is Koku, and there's Kyore and Mukaiji. And Koku means a bell ascending into the empty sky. So this is...
Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Anything else?
I guess I would like you to clarify, don't make a religion out of it.
Well, a religion is something that we need to defend. A religion is something we clothe ourselves in because we don't feel okay about who we are, because we feel scared. And we're not willing to be vulnerable. And the more we clothe ourselves in religion, I don't care if it's Buddhism or any religion, the more we come impervious to this potential of breaking, in the sense of breaking through, breaking open. And look at the history of religion. I mean, look at it. Buddhism is no better. Look at it. It's appalling. It's appalling. So we just need to be careful. Just need to be careful. Does that make sense?
So I was raised in a Catholic, and I appreciate it. Actually, I really appreciate your boldness.
My boldness? Well, see, I don't know enough.
But my wife is a Catholic convert. She was raised in a very fundamental. For years, she's drugged me to the Catholic Church on the high holy days, and I very reluctantly got on, dragging all of my old baggage with me and sitting in the church. And this year, I approached it with a very different mind this year. I decided I'd try to bring a little beginner's mind into the Catholic Church and see if I could hear some doctrine. And of course, I did. And I shut up, sat down, and listened quietly. And what I took away from the resurrection story this year is that there's a Zen teaching that says that, you know, you're going to, this is all impermanent, right? All of the things that you're standing on, right, you're eventually going to lose. Mm-hmm. And you have to come to terms with that. Mm-hmm. And here's a story about a person who's a great teacher and lost his very life, and his disciples who were listening to the teachings who lost their teacher. And, and in the end, it's okay. Because the teaching carries on. That's really what the resurrection was, even in for me, this anyway. Was even in this dark, dark, dark time, they still, it was okay. They still carried on. And the teaching carries on. It's still there. Just as you mentioned, Suzuki is still alive for these people, their teachers.
Alive, so. Sure. That's good. Thank you for sharing your own experience. Anybody else?